ears working hard to ignore the sound seeping through the walls around her. She zeroed her attention in on an article about toning one's thighs. For a second, she thought she had obtained a zen level of focus, because the sounds ceased. This theory was disproven moments later, when Sasha emerged from her and Julia's room, clad in a pink robe. "Hey," Sasha said, making a beeline for the fridge.
"Hey,"
Jill said back, turning to another page. Sasha reached in the fridge and grabbed two bottles of water, then stood at the door for a moment, staring into its depths. She reached back in and grabbed four more, juggling the six vessels as she made her way back into her room and firmly shut the door. Jill sighed. She would get maybe 10 or 15 minutes before the noise would start again. Maybe she would go to the library and read for a while. Or just go for a walk around campus. Or go see what Will was up to. Jill was still contemplating her options when the ruckus began once more. She needed to have a talk with Sasha about turning on the radio or something during boyfriend time. Really, though, Jill realized she needed to start freaking meeting men. This was just getting insufferable.
All things totaled, you had approximately $5,000 worth of damage caused by the students under your watch, destroyed a small patch of a national forest, and caused ecological damages to no less than 9 different species' habitats, Dean Blaine surmised.
Yes, sir,
Ben said weakly.
Looks like it,
Angela agreed.
Well then, good job, you two,
Dean Blaine said, setting down the packet of papers.
Beg your pardon?
Ben asked.
That's one of the least destructive river trips in the last decade. You did your jobs very well. You have my thanks, and the thanks of your school.
Sweet,
Angela said, hopping up.
We done here?
Yes, Miss DeSoto, you are free to go,
Dean Blaine replied.
Cool. Come on, Ben, let's go grab a late lunch,
she said, tugging on her fellow chaperone's arm.
Okay, I guess,
Ben said unsurely, getting out of the chair and allowing himself to be pulled from the room. Once the door was shut, Dean Blaine turned his attention back to the paperwork required for the cleanup. Even with such minimal damage, there were still a lot of forms to file and sign. He briefly wondered how many documents had to be filled out by the dean after his class went on the river trip. He couldn't be certain without the hard numbers, but he suspected it was enough that he would quit by way of setting the building on fire should such a pile ever be presented to him. 129.
You all look nice and rested,
Coach George said as he walked in front of the line of students in the combat class.
That's good. I'm glad you all got time to heal up and re-energize, because we have now entered the last mile of your freshman year. And does everyone remember what happens at the end of your freshman year?
There was no response. He'd long ago drilled out the habit of speaking without being called on. There was fear, though. Fear and uncertainty dancing behind nearly all of their eyes. He'd have preferred to see it in every last set of orbs, but some of them were just too stupid to face the possibility that they wouldn't make the cut. There were also a few too smart not to know they were a shoe-in.
That's right. At the end of the year, we have ourselves another set of matches. These won't just be fighting this time, though. They'll test every aspect a hero needs to bring to the table. Strength, intelligence, cunning, resourcefulness, And yes, even a bit of battle prowess. So keep those memories of your time off tucked away in a nice safe spot in your mind. You'll need them to keep you sane every night when you crawl into bed, your bones creaking, and your spirit crumbling. These next 2 months will be hell on you, because I am going to be personally applying the pitchfork. You see, this is my last chance to get you pansies strong enough to actually survive the second year's training, and I take that responsibility very seriously. So, do we have any questions?
Not one person's hand even dared to entertain a thought about ascending.
Glad to hear it, Coach George declared. Pair up as I call your names and get into your fighting circles. Oh, and we're changing something up today.
The students looked at him with an uneven mix of anticipation and trepidation. Coach George gave them a winning smile.
Today, my little charges, I declare that you have had your asses whipped in mortal ways long enough. As of now, you may begin using your powers.
There was a physical mumbling, if not a verbal one. It was the sound of backs cinching up in fear, knuckles cracking in excitement, and eyeballs roving in their sockets as they sized up their opponents in a whole new way. If Coach George could, he would record that sound, put it on a loop, and play it continuously as he nodded off to sleep every night. Instead, he began hollering out the pairs.
As you all know by now, not every member of this class will make the cut into the sophomore program,
Coach Persephone said, walking in a nearly identical fashion to her male counterpart.
Now, while George likes to take this time to deaden the nerves of his students, I prefer to sharpen the minds of mine.
Curiosity danced in the eyes of the supers lined up before her. That was good. Curiosity meant listening, and listening meant thinking. Thinking was what would make the difference between success and failure for her charges. That, along with creativity and determination.
Some of the tests you'll endure will be combat-based. I won't sugarcoat it for you. With precious few exceptions, most of you will come out the loser in these encounters.
The gazes of several faces turned toward the floor.
That is an acceptable loss, though, because it does not comprise the entirety of these evaluations. Think of it as giving away a pawn in order to take their king. They will hone their bodies and battle instincts over the coming months. We will be honing our minds and adaptability instead. We will double down on our strategic lessons. Your minds will ache with effort, and you will tear out your hair in frustration. But you will improve. And at the end of May, when you go into your trials, you will emerge as victorious sophomores.
It wasn't the best inspirational speech in the history of the school, but it did seem to bestow her kids with a bit of hope. At this point, that was really the best Coach Persephone could shoot for. These supers were fighting an uphill battle, proving that they were useful even without the ability to fend off an army. When they crested that hill, they would understand just how powerful they really were. Until that point, all she could do was keep them working hard in hopes of achieving what most of them saw as impossible. Persephone, at least, had the advantage of knowing something they didn't. Sometimes, attaining the impossible was simply a matter of continuously putting one foot in front of the other, no matter what. Dean Blaine and four other figures stood in a small room lined with television screens. Normally, these screens would show a variety of rooms with different teams from different classes on each one. Today, however,
They showed different angles of the two rooms where the freshman class was being addressed.
"Interesting crop," said the smallest figure,
a woman whose voice had seen its share of days.
"That's what you say every year," Dean Blaine pointed out.
"It's true every year,"
she countered. Dean Blaine had no rebuttal to this. He never did. So instead, he moved on to the task at hand.
"You've seen their files, you've watched the tapes, and you know their names. Today, we divvy them up, and you have 1.5 months to devise their test, then 1/2 month to get it all set up,"
Dean Blaine explained.
"George and Persephone already made their picks?"
This time, the voice came from a tall, male figure.
"Turned them in to me before spring break," Dean Blaine said.
"Such a prompt pair,"
said a new female voice, this one young and lilting.
"Would that I could see such efficiency from the rest of you," Dean Blaine said.
"Let's be fair. You don't keep us around because we adhere so well to the red tape,"
said the old voice.
"No, but I still expect you to take tasks like this seriously. You have the room for the next 2 hours. Make your selections and have them on my desk by the end of the day,"
Dean Blaine instructed them. He walked briskly out the door before any other snide comments could be made.
"Now then,"
said the fourth figure, a voice like silk being torn thread by thread.
"I think it's time to get down to business."
130.
"Shit!"
Coach George yelled, diving for cover. The errant bolt of electricity sizzled by his head, narrowly missing him. Instead, it struck a hard, concrete outcropping a few feet behind him as other bolts followed different paths to similar results.
"Sorry," Vince said sheepishly. The first time, he'd been tripping over himself in concern that he'd wounded his teacher, but truthfully, after so many near misses, the initial panic had become notably subdued.
"No harm done," Coach George assured him. "Refuel and try again."
Vince and Coach George were having a one-on-one session for ranged training. They were in a room with exceptional insulation and no electrical conduits or metal. Coach George hadn't been exaggerating about the variety of resources at Lander. They really did have a room for nearly every conceivable training necessity. That was proving to be a very good thing, because, by George's calculations, the kid would have caused hundreds of thousands of dollars in wiring damage by now if they'd been outside this room.
"Yes, sir," Vince said, jogging back over to the car battery at the edge of the room. In the weeks they'd been training, he hadn't been having much luck, so they were now trying a new tactic. Instead of draining the battery at once, Vince only took a little bit of electricity at a time, used it in an attack, then drained a little more. This had two benefits in that it allowed a single battery to fuel him for a long training session, and it kept the damage from being too spectacular when his blasts went off course, which, to date, was pretty much every time he threw one.
"Let's decrease the distance again,"
Coach George suggested once Vince had, in a sense, reloaded. Vince nodded and approached a small pile of concrete on the ground. So far, they'd tried breathing techniques, aiming techniques, and even rubber gloves with the fingers cut out. None of it had kept the electricity from splintering. Now, they had gone back to basics. The only time Vince had successfully used electricity was against Thomas, with a very small gap between them.
The new set of tests were to see if there was a distance which was small enough that it didn't allow time for the energy to slip out of control. If such a measurement did exist, then the next step would be to increase it. "How far this time?" Vince asked.
"Last time we did 40 feet. This time, let's take it to 30,
Coach George told him. He repositioned himself carefully behind his student. While a shot of lightning certainly wasn't going to kill someone like George, it didn't mean it was something he was chomping at the bit to experience, especially not in his human form. Vince narrowed his focus and slowed his breathing. He concentrated on the pile of rocks in front of him, on the spot just at the very top. He raised his hand carefully, his fingers tentatively outstretched. Vince imagined the electricity, bright blue and white hot, arcing from his palm to the rocks in a single brilliant beam. He held that vision firmly in his mind, drowning out the rest of the world. Nothing existed outside the room. There was no coach standing behind him. Even he didn't exist. Nothing permeated this world save the rocks, his hand, and the arc that would connect them. Vince expelled a breath outward and let the energy fly. It struck 7 different spots. Though, to give appropriate credit, one of them was fairly close to the rock clump. Crap, Vince swore.
Chin up, Reynolds,
Coach George said, walking forward.
Believe it or not, this is progress. It didn't split up as much this time.
Yeah, Vince agreed, dejection slithering in his voice. That means if I get really close, it probably won't splinter at all.
And that's a good thing, Coach George reminded him.
It is, and it isn't. To be honest, I was holding out hope that the reason I was able to use electricity against Thomas was something to do with my mindset or my technique. That way I could learn it, master it, and begin relying on a new form of energy in combat.
Which is what we're doing.
Not exactly. What we're really doing is finding at what distance the lightning separates. That isn't me affecting anything, except how close I can be when I use it. I suppose I would just prefer overcoming a personal limitation to a physical one.
Heh, that in itself makes you an oddball,
Coach George said.
Listen, Reynolds, this kind of thing is a process with any power. First, you get the concept of it, then you find its flaws and limits, and then you figure out how to circumvent as many as you can. It's something all heroes have to go through, and it can take a long-ass time. Hell, why do you think we put you through 4 years of this before you're even allowed to work under an existing hero in the field?
I just wish I had better control, Vince said. Coach George patted him on the back.
That's the hardest part of all this. Throwing cars, bouncing off bullets, jumping between continents, all that shit is easy if you've got the gift. But knowing how to do it safely, and even more importantly, when to do it, those are the real skills a hero needs to master.
I guess that means I won't be adding lightning to my arsenal anytime soon, Vince noted.
Maybe, maybe not,
Coach George said.
The best arsenals are versatile ones. If we find out you can't use electricity safely from more than 10 feet, then yeah, you won't be including it in your ranged repertoire. On the other hand, it could be a devastating technique to whip out in close combat. Even if it was down to a few inches, you could make it so that every punch you throw is an overclocked taser.
Vince considered the idea and thought back to his first fight of the year with Michael. If his one punch had carried just a little extra juice, the whole thing could have turned out differently. That might not be a bad idea, Vince admitted.
Glad to hear an 18-year-old believes I can actually do my job,
Coach George said.
Go refuel.
Yes, sir, Vince repeated, jogging back to the battery. If nothing else, this training was giving him a lot of experience in controlling how much energy he took from a source, rather than draining it dry. That was one skill he was exceptionally happy to master. It was a constant, daily reminder that, no matter how much trouble he might be having, at least he wasn't powered anymore. That was usually enough to lift his spirits quite effectively.
131.
As our year begins drawing closer to its end, I would like to move our conversations to more summary topics,
Dean Blaine said. He'd been taking it a little easier on them in the past few weeks, well aware that George and Persephone would be turning up the heat and stressing them out. Add that to the demands from their regular classes, and it could be argued that the real point of this semester was training in how to handle eye-gouging levels of stress. An argument, by the way, that would not be entirely off point.
Today, I wanted to talk about the HCP as a whole. We take people with extraordinary abilities and a desire to help, and we refine them into nigh unstoppable warriors of justice. Yet, at the same time, we take others with equally amazing talents and cast them out, telling them they are forbidden from getting involved when they see innocence in distress. The question I pose to you is, why? Why do we insist so emphatically that the only person worthy of wearing the title of hero is someone who has been given this course's full education?
Everyone knows that, Stella said. Insurance.
If you're going to speak out of turn, you could at least present a fully formed argument, Dean Blaine chastised her.
Okay, Stella said. I mean, it's really obvious. People with abilities can cause a whole lot of collateral damage, even more so when they are fighting someone else with powers. That means people filing insurance claims for their homes and businesses. The companies really hate paying out all that money, though. They'd make us quit getting into fights, but regular law enforcement agencies aren't able to restrain people with strong powers. At least, not as effectively as we can. So since they can't tell us not to stop supers who are killing and stealing, and they can't refuse to pay out every time one of us causes damage, the only other option is to demand that the people stopping them, the people we call heroes, have been properly trained to minimize that collateral damage. That's why the training and certification started. It was so supers could do their job without being held financially liable for every flipped truck and melted mailbox that wound up in their wake.
Dean Blaine blinked in surprise, as did a large amount of the class. Stella, while forceful, was rarely so well informed on a topic.
That was an excellent, well-reasoned theory, Dean Blaine said.
My dad is an insurance adjuster, Stella said by way of explanation.
I see. That sheds a little light on it, Dean Blaine said. And Miss Hawkins is correct. The roots of the HCP are most certainly in the goal of allowing those with special talents to use them to help people without being afraid of fiscal reprisal. That was the beginning, though. Designed to suit a program far less expansive than our current HCP. Who else can tell me why we hold our defenders to such rigorous standards?
This time, several hands went up. Dean Blaine called on the fastest to get it out of the way.
Yes, Miss Adair?
Because we have to know more than just how to do the least damage to a city block. We need to know how to avoid or least limit civilian casualties. We need to know how to deal with hostage situations, and how to cope with the political implications of chasing someone across international lines. Being a hero means people are trusting you with their lives. We need to be as best prepared to live up to that trust as possible,
Alice said.
Very good, Dean Blaine said. However, as with the insurance, These are things that are already widely known and accepted as reasons for the HCP. I'm more looking for things that you, as participants, can appreciate, that an outsider wouldn't understand the necessity of.
Most of the hands went down at this stipulation. A few stayed raised, though, and Dean Blaine perused his pickings, selecting one after a few seconds of analysis.
Mr. DeSoto.
We're learning humility, Shane said. Most of us came from towns where, if we weren't the only super, we were one of very few. We grew up feeling like we were untouchable. We aren't. And some people needed to experience that firsthand to believe it.
Now that is an excellent one,
Dean Blaine complimented.
Few people not in the program would understand just how important losing is. Mr. Wells, what is another example?
We're learning what to really expect,
Alan said.
Before this class, it had never occurred to me how many hard choices would come with being a hero. I thought of it as just blasting away at bad guys. Knowing what I do now, I'm approaching this potential future with a lot more caution. I still want to do it, but I have a better idea of what I'm in for. If I had to face some tough situations in the field with no mental preparation, it could have ranged from problematic to traumatic, depending on how bad things got.
Quite true, Dean Blaine agreed. The preparation of the mind is, in my opinion, one of the most undervalued necessities we instill here at Lander. Mr. Campbell, do you have another point you'd like to add?
Nick's hand hadn't been up, but he rolled with the question anyway. Dean Blaine had made it clear long ago that the hand system was ancillary. He would call on whomever he pleased to answer him.
The physical training, Nick replied. I mean, yeah, most people get that a hero needs to be strong, but how many understand that he needs to have stamina, flexibility, and pain endurance, even when he isn't a frontline fighter? I think outsiders picture us just lifting buses and chewing on nails. They don't appreciate the full range of effort we have to put in just to be adequate in a support capacity, let alone a frontline one.
A bit obvious, but valid, I'll give you that, Dean Blaine said. Now that's all focusing on the positive, what you get out of being here. That isn't the entirety of the process, however. For every student who graduates, there are tens to hundreds that tried for that spot. Putting aside obvious concerns about physical capability, why do we keep them out? Wouldn't it make more sense to allow everyone to help who wants to do so?
No, Vince said, speaking up. Because not everyone should be a hero.
Would you like to elaborate, Vince?
I just mean that being looked up to and exalted, that comes with a lot of prestige, a lot of power. That's going to attract plenty of supers, not just the ones who genuinely want to help. It's not a bad idea to have some sort of filter before we just hand out a title that tells everyone this is a person they can trust and rely on, Vince explained.
You're quite right, Dean Blaine said. Heroes are trusted by civilians and governments alike. We have to be very careful who we give such responsibility to, and not just in case they have less than pure intentions. Who can tell me another danger of letting anyone through the HCP?
Because the worst-case scenario is that someone starts as a genuine hero and then turns,
said Chad, face staring down at his desk.
Go on,
Dean Blaine said softly.
A super who commits crimes is a pain for the regular people to deal with, but heroes can handle most of them in relatively short order. When a hero turns, on the other hand, he doesn't just bring his abilities to the table. He brings all the training he received in the HCP, all the combat experience he acquired on the job, all the secrets he was made privy to, and all the trust that other heroes have in him. When a hero turns away from the law, entire towns get destroyed, and other heroes almost always die.
There is a very unfortunate amount of truth in that statement,
Dean Blaine said.
It is one of the key reasons we screen so thoroughly before admitting someone to the HCP. We seek to determine not only who they are, but also who they will become over time. It is a difficult task, and one we put tremendous effort and resources into. However, we are not, I'm sad to say, always successful.
132. The class looked like life had come after them in a dark alley, wielding a sock full of quarters. They were haggard, tired, and worn. Since the return from break, George and Persephone had kept their promise, treating each gym session as though it were their final chance to enact some sort of long-festering revenge on the students in their charge. The battles were brutal, the mental exercises exhausting, and there was constant drilling of strategies historically used by different heroes. The end result was that, as the class gathered on Friday afternoon, they didn't fall into line so much as gradually limp there. Some of them were suffering from literal physical pains. The class had just ended, and they hadn't had a chance to meet with the healer yet. Others were simply laboring under a weary spirit, demonstrating physical distress as an outlet for what they were coping with internally.
"You all look like utter shit," Coach George said as they finished lining up. "And with only 3 weeks left until finals. I don't think most of you could take on a sack full of terminal kittens right now, let alone a trained warrior wielding superhuman abilities."
The class stood stoically, most of them in healthy agreement of his assessment.
"A mind is like a knife," Coach Persephone said, taking her turn to walk down the line. "It must be kept sharp, bright, and always at the ready. Look at you all. Half of you haven't even been able to hear this whole speech. That's how much your brains are glossing over."
Again, the coaches were met with a weathered, beaten silence.
"It is for these reasons that things will be changing a bit," Coach George said. "Persephone and I feel that we have taken you as far as you are capable of going in the time allotted to us. That isn't to say we couldn't whip your squishy asses into beasts if we had a decade to play with, but all we were given was a single school year. So, rather than drive you into the ground one by one over the remaining time before your exam, we're taking a different approach."
"As of Monday," Coach Persephone announced, "you are all ordered to be on rest for 1 week."
There was a ripple through the students, certain their feeble minds had snapped and full-blown delusion had set in.
"The gym, the training rooms, and all the facilities will be completely off-limits to you during those 7 days," Coach Persephone continued. "Once that time has passed, you will spend the remaining 2 weeks undergoing a personalized training regimen. By that, we mean you will work out in the ways that you find most effective. This can occur during your formally scheduled gym time or whenever you have free time. We are legally obligated to remind you that staying in the HCP requires the maintaining of a C average or better, so budget your time between training and study wisely."
Looks were now being exchanged, each seeking clarification from the others that this was really happening.
"During these 2 weeks, Coach Persephone and I will be on hand, should any of you wish to schedule time with us for personal tutorials. That will be the limit of our involvement from now until your exam, though,"
Coach George said.
"And one last piece of business," Coach Persephone said. "Many of you have noticed that there is a day between the last finals at Lander University and the commencement of your test here in the HCP. This day is used as a dead day for final preparations and recovery. It is something of a tradition, however, for the staff to put on a small festival for the students on the night testing is over. It will occur in the gym,
and there will be food, some dancing, and games. This is done as a stress-relieving outlet, and to buffer between the sets of finals. We hope to see you all here."
With that, she and Coach George turned and made a swift exit. They never turned back once, yet the students still didn't begin to mill about until several moments after the doors had swung shut.
"Can anyone else not believe that just freaking happened?" Nick said, as the group walked briskly toward Melbrook.
"It makes a lot of sense, if you really think about it,"
Mary pointed out.
"We're supposed to be at our peak for the exam. That's hard to pull off when we're getting pummeled every week."
"No kidding," Roy agreed. "Even I'm starting to feel it after these past few months. 3 more weeks and I think Chad would be the only man able to still stay standing on test day."
"Roy Daniels, did you just admit you think someone is stronger than you?"
Mary gasped.
"Only for now," Roy replied with a smarmy grin.
"Yeah, well, this is a boon none of us expected, and I say we celebrate," Nick tossed out. "I'll go to the video store."
The group groaned collectively.
"Not another bad movie night,"
Alice protested.
"Literally anything but that."
"Literally?
Okay then, how about a rousing game of Strip Twister?" Nick asked.
"One day, some lucky girl is going to castrate you, and I sincerely hope I'm around to see it,"
Alice replied.
"All dong mangling aside, I'm with the chicks on this one," Roy agreed. "Even Herschel is tired of those things."
"You guys are nuts. My choice in horrific cinema is the stuff of legend. Back me up here, Vince," Nick said.
"Yeah, whatever you guys want," Vince said, his eyes shifting about.
"I've got something to take care of real quick. I'll see you back at the dorm."
With that, Vince was jogging off hastily, backpack bouncing against him as he dashed.
"That was odd," Nick observed.
"Let him be," Mary said. "He'll be back soon."
Nick glanced at her momentarily, then shrugged it off.
"Whatever. I say we start with the Death Couch 2 and Death Couch 4, just to set the mood."
This time, the group groan was louder and held for a full 30 seconds. 133. There was a timid knock on George's door.
"Come in, Reynolds,"
Coach George called out, not even glancing up from his work. Vince stepped in slowly, working his way forward and standing in front of the desk.
"How did you know it was me?"
"Because my superiors and colleagues don't knock, and you're the only frequent student visitor who hits the door like he's scared it will hit back."
"Oh. Sorry, I guess," Vince said.
"Don't worry about it, kid. On my list of stuff to watch out for, someone who knocks softly isn't exactly on top. So, what can I do for you?"
"I wanted to schedule some one-on-one time to work on my electricity techniques."
Coach George let out a sigh.
"I was afraid you were going to say that. Take a seat, Reynolds."
Vince complied and plopped down in the available chair.
"We've been at this for months now, and what we've discovered is that, at a distance of more than a few inches, your electricity arcs wild every time. When it does, it's impossible to determine which direction it's going. Hell, half the time it doesn't even include the initial target in the spray of places it strikes,"
Coach George pointed out.
"Yes, sir," Vince agreed. "That's why I'm here to schedule time, so I can get better."
"And I applaud that kind of spirit, that a problem is only a problem until you work through it. That said, you've got 3 weeks until we put you through one of the hardest tests of your life. You're going to need to be in peak form. Do you think there might be a better way to spend your time?"
"I'm confused. Are you telling me to give up on using electricity?"
Absolutely not,
Coach George said emphatically.
I've known supers who would kill for the level of versatility your power gives you. What I'm saying is that sometimes it's all about time management. You have 2 weeks of allowed training time. Now, what do you think will pay off more for your test? Struggling to invent a way to utilize electricity, or polishing up and refining what you can do with fire?
I guess that would depend on if I succeeded with the electricity or not, Vince said honestly.
Not really,
Coach George disagreed.
It's 2 weeks, not 2 months. Even if you do neglect other parts of your training and manage to find a way to control the bolts, you're not going to have time to master it. The best-case scenario is you walk out there with an unrefined technique that may or may not play out well, as opposed to being fresh and ready with an element you know how to use.
I suppose there's logic in that, Vince admitted. I still want to learn better electrical control, though.
I'm 100% behind you on that, kid. All I'm saying is pick your timing. Playing with new stuff is for downtime. This is crunch time. Crunch time is for focusing on what you've got.
Yes, sir. I think I'll do that. Vince agreed. He stood from the chair. Thank you for your time, and for the advice.
That's why they pay me the big bucks, Coach George said. And for what it's worth, kid, I hope to see you back here next year.
Thank you, Vince said, stepping out of the office. He wasn't certain, but he was pretty sure he'd just experienced the closest thing to a compliment Coach George was capable of imparting. A manila envelope fell out of Michael Clark's locker as he pulled the door open. He had just finished doing some extra Friday training before the ban went into effect, and was going to grab his clothes to change back. This envelope was a new addition to his items, one he hadn't added. Michael reached down and scooped up the envelope, cursorily noting it seemed to be moderately thick with contents. He glanced around, almost more out of obligation than expectation. If someone had slipped an envelope into his locker like this, it was highly unlikely they were going to stick around to be seen. He'd been training for 3 hours, so that left an enormous window of time for anyone to come in here and squeeze it in through an opening in the door. No, the only viable clue to the envelope's origins was the envelope itself. Michael carefully undid the metal clasp and pulled out the first few pages. Some were newspaper clippings, some were police reports, some were just random photographs. There didn't seem to be any theme throughout them, not one that Michael could discern anyway. Michael was about to toss the mystery back into his locker when something in one of the photographs caught his eye. Michael's breath froze in his throat, an electrical burst of wonder jolting through his system. He looked through the documents again, this time with a better sense of what to check for. He scoured them for 5 solid minutes before he realized he was still standing in the gym locker room. The cold air and blazing excitement swirled in contrast as he sprang into action. Hurriedly, he threw his street clothes on, tucked the envelope carefully into his gym bag, and made a bolt for the lifts that would take him to his dorm. As soon as he arrived, Michael locked the door tight. His eyes danced briefly to a bottle of scotch in the corner. Michael brushed the thought away immediately. He could, and would, drink later to celebrate. Right now, he had work to do. 134.
It's official, Herschel said as the credits began to roll. We never let Nick pick another movie. All in favor?
A reverberating chorus of, "Aye,
momentarily deafened everyone in the room. "You guys just don't appreciate good cinematography," Nick defended.
"By all means, please explain to me the cinematographic brilliance of Blood Fountain 3, The Bloodening,"
Sasha dared.
"For starters, there was the way the splatter patterns always caught the light in just the right way to maximize the sensation of gore,"
Nick said. In response, he was struck in the face by a pillow, hurled from across the room by Alice. Nick turned his head and glared in response, only to be met by an innocent smile and a covert point toward Alex. Nick wasn't buying it, partially because he wasn't stupid, and partially because he had seen her do the tossing in his peripheral vision. Nick snatched the pillow from the ground, reared back, and let fly at his blonde target. The pillow ceased its trajectory in midair, floating slowly into Mary's lap. She was nestled on the couch with Herschel, and while his arm wasn't wrapped around her, their proximity was far closer than that of platonic friends.
"No pillow fighting in the living room," Mary said. "That's how things get broken."
Nick stuck out his tongue. "Nah, you suck, Mom." Vince laughed. "You know, if anyone in this dorm had the authority to play the mother role, it would be Mary."
"I don't think that's true,"
Mary began, though her speech faltered when she noticed the entire population of the room, which consisted of the Melbrook residents, along with Will, Jill, Alex, and Sasha, all nodding in agreement.
"It's a good thing," Alice assured her. "It just means you're the only one who can put everyone in their place. Also, I mean, you are kind of the mom."
"How am I the mom?"
"You stop us from throwing pillows in the house," Nick pointed out. "You make us all get salads at dinner," Vince added.
"You make sure everyone has done their homework each night," Alice said.
"You've said before that if you could have a car, it would be a minivan,"
Herschel said delicately.
"Oh, don't you start,"
Mary said, thrusting a finger into Herschel's chest.
"Sorry,"
Herschel said, a very unapologetic smile visible on his face.
"Oh!"
Jill said, sitting up excitedly.
"I've got one. You always seem to have Kleenex or tissue on hand."
"Okay, okay, I get it."
Mary tossed up her hands in mock frustration.
"I'm the mom. You got me. Yeesh, part of me is glad I've only got 3 more weeks of you people."
3 weeks to cram with as much vintage cinema as possible," Nick said. This time, he ducked the pillow Alice chucked at him. He was not so lucky, however, with the one thrown by Mary.
"I thought you said no pillow throwing,"
Nick coughed as he dislodged the pillow from his chest.
"Who's your mommy now?"
Mary returned, with a Cheshire grin. Nick reared back to return fire, but Vince leaned forward and deftly plucked the projectile from his hand. "I'll be the mom. No throwing pillows indoors. Besides, you know she'll just catch it halfway there and send it back at you," Vince said.
"True. You combat types and your range-deflecting capabilities,"
Nick said. "Part of it is that. Part of it is that she's planning on spending her next 3 weeks training instead of watching movies."
"Funny how much that can add to one's skill level," Vince pointed out.
3 weeks? You gotta be kidding me. I think at this point, if we aren't good to go, we might as well just pack our crap," Nick replied.
"Have any of you guys thought about that?"
Alex asked tentatively.
"Thought about the test? Sure, it's been a worry for me and an excitement for Roy ever since they announced it,"
Herschel said.
"No, I mean, have you thought about what happens if you fail the test? About what it would be like to not come back next year?"
Alex clarified.
"Oh,"
Herschel said, as the meaning set in.
"A little bit. To be honest, I haven't worried about it a whole lot. Roy has gotten amazingly better throughout the year, especially since he started sparring with Chad. I don't think he's going to be top of the class, but I'm pretty sure we won't get sent home.
I might,
Alice said, her voice lightly tremoring with fear.
I mean, I do well at some of the puzzle and strategy exercises, but I haven't made any progress in finding new ways to use my power. I just fly. That's all I've ever done, and I'm not sure if that's going to cut it.
Flying is a useful ability, Vince assured her. The first rule in every battle is capture the high ground. Elevation is important for a lot of different strategies.
Useful? Sure, I'll agree with that. But we're not talking about just being useful, we're talking about becoming a hero.
By that logic, several of us are at high risk,
Will chimed in.
My talents are most often assessed in a support role rather than a primary one. Your power is somewhat limited in its applications. Alex is little more than a weaker form of Mary, and Nick's power is nebulous and ill-defined at its best.
Wow, way to cheer everyone up,
Jill said, noting the downcast faces throughout the room.
I wasn't finished yet,
Will said.
My point was that failure is a constant possibility for us. We can't alter the abilities we were given, so the only thing within our control is to press forward with all we possess. We must train relentlessly, fight unyieldingly, and refuse to surrender in spite of all odds. These are qualities needed not just to make it through another round of the HCP, but ones we must absolutely have if we truly wish to be heroes.
That was surprisingly eloquent, Sasha said.
I have my moments,
Will replied. Much as I agree with Will, I feel obligated to point out that we have been banned from training for the next week, Nick said. So I think it is our duty as both students and as potential failouts from the HCP to try and enjoy ourselves a bit. You know, just in case.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I agree with Nick,
Mary admitted. It only burns the first time, Vince told her. He glanced at Sasha, who gave a shrug and kissed him on the cheek. I guess we're in for whatever. The others nodded in a non-committal fashion, which Nick chose to interpret as an unflinching, complete adherence to any word he spoke.
Awesome, Nick said. Now, to start us off right, the multiplex downtown is doing a blood and gore marathon tomorrow night.
It was at this point that he was forced to vault behind the chair to escape the spontaneous, coordinated barrage of pillows directed at his body. 135. Alice leaned back in her chair and let out a groan.
I'm sick of this. What asshole created calculus in the first place?
Mary glanced up from her own pile of books.
I think Isaac Newton is credited with a lot of it.
Alice arched an eyebrow.
The gravity guy? I can see why the apple took a swing at him.
That's actually just a story,
Mary said, her eyes going back to her work.
Like Einstein failing math as a kid. I think they circulate them to make geniuses seem more human.
After spending a week reading over this crap, people who comprehend calculus seem less human to me than the coffee maker,
Alice replied. She stretched her back with a series of audible pops and settled back down to her own tasks. The duo was sitting in the library, the above-ground one for all Lander students, along with several hundred of their peers. With finals pressing down on them, the Lander populace was hitting the books with the determination available only to the truly committed and the incredibly desperate. Oddly, the two categories were often one and the same. Every table in the place was occupied, with an abundance of students prowling along the walls, eyes darting about for any seat about to become open. The instant it did, there was a mad flurry of movement, concluding in triumph for one lucky soul and bitter failure for the others. If any of them paused to reflect on just how much study time they were wasting by trying to study alongside everyone else, the thought had as much effect as pointing out to an amateur writer how much time and money they wasted each day by insisting they commute to Starbucks to pound out their masterpieces in view of apathetic patrons. Alice and Mary had set up shop earlier in the day, staking out a table and leaving only in shifts, while the remaining girl gave death glares to anyone approaching the empty chair. They'd been working together as finals drew closer, keeping the other accountable for the amount of effort they had to put in for each class. It was, of course, tempting to slack off, but with the other always at hand, giving the guilt eyes, they'd managed to stay on track for all their tests so far.
"Shouldn't we be devoting more time to training?" Alice asked a few minutes later. "Think it will make a difference?"
Mary asked.
"Honestly, no. Not really. I think I'll just need to warm up for a few days before. I don't see me getting much better than where I'm at, though,"
Alice admitted.
"Same here. Think another few hours figuring out this math will help?"
Probably, Alice yielded.
"Then back to it,"
Mary replied.
"Only another 2 hours, and we can break for dinner."
"That'll be nice," Alice said.
"Yeah. Plus we can use flashcards to drill each other while we eat,"
Mary pointed out. The thump of Alice's head slamming into her books was loud enough to draw a chorus of shushes from the nearby tables. Alex turned the page in his book and let out a deep breath. Unlike the girls, he was doing his study time alone in his dorm room. His roommate was off training his body for the exam, so Alex had the place to himself. That was a good thing. He functioned best in peace and quiet. Alex sat cross-legged on his bed, a biology book resting comfortably in his lap. All around the small room, various objects were floating in the air. Pencils, books, toothpaste, and a pillow were just some of the levitated furnishings. About once an hour, Alex would add another object to the fray, splitting his concentration into yet another new direction. He'd been at this for a few days, and he'd successfully raised the maximum he could handle while studying from 14 to 19. His goal was to hit 25 before the exam. On that note, Alex realized it had been an hour. He mentally scooped up his alarm clock a few feet from the ground and turned the page in his book. Alex felt really bad for the people who had to pick between working on their academics and their HCP material. For his money, there was no strategy quite like multitasking. To the untrained eye, it would look like Nick was watching television in the middle of the afternoon when he should have been studying. To the trained eye, it would look the same, except they might notice the depression on the couch and the lines on his face that indicated he had been there all day. Nick let out a yawn and switched the channel. He'd have to go out with Bubbles tonight. She was proving to be too excellent an excuse and shield to let go of any time soon. But for now, he was just relaxing. He'd browsed through his class materials on the first day off and decided he had an A-minus to C-grade understanding of everything he would be tested on. That meant he was free to use his study time to sit in front of the television while mind-numbing schlock flickered across the screen. It would have been a terrible strategy to employ, if he'd actually been watching it. The problem with both the trained and untrained eye is that they wouldn't see the cogs whizzing about in Nick's brain. They wouldn't know that he was going back through his entire year, day by day, interaction by interaction, and scanning each minute for information about the people he'd be coming up against. No set of eyes, regardless of training,